I hope all news is good with you. And the number here is toll free, 888-248-2046. As we do every day, we've got to hold fast to our obligation to educate our listeners. This is not like the mainstream media. This is not in-flight entertainment while our plane is in a nosedive. This is not a place where talk radio is a bunch of banter, a bunch of crazy rhetoric where one person insults another. This is preservative talk radio. Ultimately, our goal is to educate this next generation. We're fighting against, yes, I am, you may think I'm crazy, but it just turns out that there's been a lot of information being pumped in the minds and hearts of our young people ever since I was a child. I am almost as old as the current president of the United States. I'm about 6 months younger. Both of us were raised in a similar educational system. And the education system had a tendency to try to teach us things that were contrary to possibly the classic American cultural Western Christian worldview. It definitely did. Fortunately, I did really badly in school, so I wasn't paying attention. During psychology class, I read through the Lord of the Rings trilogy. That's what I did. I was getting a B plus until the teacher caught me and he made me start to listen to his lecture. My grade went down after I started actually listening to him. Maybe he was just talking about things that weren't on the test. I'd go home and read the book, and the book covered the test. The test covered the book, so I was doing fine until he made me listen. I'll tell you what made me not tune in. This first question that I asked, actually I think it was the first question anybody in the class asked, came from me. Just 16, didn't know what for, just didn't have a clue in the world, of course. And the teacher was explaining what psychology is. You know, it's a study of the psyche. What is it that causes mankind to do what they do? What is it that causes people to do this or that or whatever? What are all the factors? And they went and talked about various factors, different kind of factors that they are trying to determine. Is this genetic? Is it evolutionary? Is it your environment? Is it your teaching? What is the kind of things? Is the innate things? Is it genetic? Did I say genetic? Whatever. He kept talking about a bunch of things. And then I missed something there. And it occurred to me, and I raised my hand, and I said, and he stops talking. And he says, yes. Like, what do you want? Where does God fit into all this? And he kind of looks and goes, it doesn't. He doesn't. I thought, oh, and I was just 16. I didn't know any better. And immediately I went, oh, this guy does not have the answer. There's ultimately a right and a wrong. The worldview that I had was that men are depraved. They're imperfect. They've got a genetic tendency to do the things that are ultimately harmful. You don't see lions and tigers killing each other. They kill their food that they eat, but they don't kill each other. They duke it out, you know, over the favorite lioness or something like that. And that happens in nature. But they don't do weird things to each other. Two lions don't do weird things to each other, and lionesses don't do weird things to each other. Man is different. Man isn't just going according to the rules of survival, the laws of thermodynamics. He reaps the benefits. Those consequences of our behavior will come to us. But what happens, in fact, they come to us more often than in nature in general, because we have a tendency to do those things that would, by nature, be self-destructive. So, when he said, you know, God doesn't come into the picture, I went, oh, in my head, I thought, this stuff is almost irrelevant. It's interesting, but you can see how certain things hold true in certain situations, but don't hold true in other situations. And there's one thing that holds true in all situations, and he's completely leaving that out of the equation. So they'll never come to the answer. There's one conclusion they can't come to, and that's a very important conclusion. So that's the educational system I was in which I was raised. See how I avoided that ending in a preposition? I didn't learn that in school. So here we are with this worldview that has just cast off all things in reality. We're distracted by our in-flight entertainment while our plane's in a nosedive. And that is one thing with media. They do a lot of sensational stuff. So I looked today at sensational things. I actually did a little, let me check my Tennessee news to see how we're doing there. Oh, wow, that's kind of neat. I'll just come back to that later, maybe. What I determined is, I said, well, there's things in the news that are being pushed upon us rapidly. And sometimes you say, well, why are you always talking about it? Well, it's keep being pushed on you. Go to CNN.com, ABC News, CBS News, Reuters. I mean, it's just all over there. And there's this confusion, and most Americans don't know the foundations of why in America, let's say, a person couldn't have six husbands, or a person could not have their sister as their wife. What's the basis of that? In Saudi Arabia, there was a certain prohibition. You couldn't have more than four wives, unless you're excessively rich. You're a king, you can have as many as you want. But what is it in America? Why would you not be able to marry your chihuahua? Why? I mean, come on. It's a free country, right? So today, just for a little bit of weird rhetoric, I'm actually going to read something, again, that the founders of the country were reading. Those who had a worldview, the worldview that started the greatest country in history, the most wealthy country in history, the most physically powerful, militarily, just the strength of the people, the fortitude of the health, the stature of the people from coast to coast. I mean, just amazing compared to anything in history, except things prior to a major cataclysm that happened a while back. Let me go ahead and read this. This is Blackstone's Commentaries on the Laws of England, book the first chapter, the 15th, of Husband and Wife. The second, now what I'm going to do, I'm just going to read this. You're on radio, so just sit back, relax, and enjoy your coffee. Hopefully be careful while you're driving. And I'm going to walk through this and kind of give commentary as we go. And the number here is 888-248-2046. It's a little bit different. But hey, you're not going to get, you should have been getting this at home, at school, 150 years ago. And somewhere back about 100 years ago, this stuff started being ignored. Actually, it started being ignored in Harvard Law School, probably about 120 years ago. The second private relations of persons is that of marriage. You're talking about private relation. It's marriage. It includes the reciprocal duties. Now listen to that. A reciprocal duty of husband and wife. How do you know the duty of a husband and wife? What's the history of that? It's mentioned in the Bible. It talks about the Apostle Paul said that husbands should give and honor the wife with affections due her, and the wife should honor the husbands with affections due him, keeping themselves apart only for a time for fasting and prayer. So seek some time individually, seeking God's face, but don't keep yourselves apart. Don't keep apart from one another. That's in the Bible. So the reciprocal duties of husband and wife, as most of our elder law books called them, of baron and femme, I don't know, I guess it's Latin, in the considerate of which I shall in the first place inquire or ask, how marriages may be contracted or made. How were they made? This question was put to folks in 1766 is when this was published. How are marriages contracted or made? Shall next point out the manner in which they may be dissolved, and shall lastly take a view of the legal effects and consequence of marriage. So that's our theme today, is marriage. Marriage. We're going to be talking about marriage. Our law considers marriage in no other light than as a civil contract. And that's what people are talking about today. Civil union, civil contract. And you say, oh, okay, good. So it's just, hey, there's nothing different. Well, let's look at this. In 1766, Blackstone said, our law, that's the civil law, not the canon law, the ecclesiastical law, our law, that's civil law, considers marriage in no other light than as a civil contract. Well, if that's all it is, can't you just contract to do anything? Can't you? I'm going to come back to that. If you know the answer, give me a call, 888-248-2046. If you know about contracts and right and wrong, you can give me a call, 888-248-2046. The holiness of the matrimonial state is left entirely to the ecclesiastical law. Temporal courts not having jurisdiction to consider unlawful marriages as sin, but merely as a civil inconvenience. So there is a distinction there, folks, with the civil government and the church, ecclesiastical law, they call it. The holiness of the matrimonial state is left entirely to the ecclesiastical law. The temporal courts not having jurisdiction to consider unlawful marriages as sin, but merely as a civil inconvenience. Okay? So remember, if you go back, and you have to know the context of everything that Sir William Blackstone said. He said in his first commentaries, his introduction, that he explained certain things that had moral consequences and were judged ultimately on Judgment Day, and that there's ultimately a highest law is the revealed law. As far as this man was concerned, as he communicated in law in 1766, that there was a higher law than every other thing, and every other civil law had to conform to it or it wasn't law. That same principle showed up in Marbury versus Madison. So let's step back. He said there, I'll have to quote these principles to you without actually having to go to that segment on Blackstone's commentaries. But he said that revealed law, that in the Holy Script, was how we knew what the revealed law of God was. And then there was the law of nature that he didn't spell out necessarily, but we figure it out by looking at nature. And then there's those things, civil law is those things that Almighty God is indifferent to. The civil things that we do. How do we regulate our intercourse in the old way of using the term, how you and I relate to each other in business and our activities as a neighbor and things like that. So those are the kind of things. So let's look at marriage here. He says, our law, that civil law, considers it no other light than as a civil contract. So it seems that you could do just about anything you want, if that's all you had read. The holiness of matrimonial state is left entirely to the ecclesiastical law. Temporal courts not having jurisdiction to consider unlawful marriages as sin, but merely as a civil inconvenience. The punishment, therefore, or annulling of incestuous, now look at the list here, incestuous or other unscriptural marriages is the province of the spiritual courts, which act pro salute anime, in other words, after the fact. Act pro salute after it's happened. And taking it in its civil light, the law treats it as it does all other contracts, allowing it to be good and valid in all cases where the parties at the time of making it were in the first place willing to contract, secondly, able to contract, and lastly, actual did contract in the proper forms and solemnities required by law. So that's what we're going to talk about. It's challenging to the brain cells, but I realize as people listen to some of the things I say that they eventually actually learn this stuff. So I'm going to do it today. We're going to talk about marriage in its classic sense, that the history of law in America, the things that the founders understood when they framed our government, limitations of civil government compared to the things of the church. David Allen Carmichael, My Faith and Freedom Show, going to be back. I call it Preservative Talk Radio. Check it out at preservativetalkradio.com.